Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
He doesn't fit. And I thought maybe that would be overblown, but then it doesn't work. And that becomes the lasting narrative on Brian Kelly was, of course it didn't work. He didn't fit. It's like, well, I mean, did Nick Saban fit before he got there? I don't know. I guess West Virginia maybe is like fake South, whereas Boston, where Brian Kelly was originally from, is not. But I mean, Brian Kelly spent most of his life in the Midwest. Everybody acts like he's some New Englander. Like, he hasn't called New England home in a long, long time. Now, the Midwest is not the South, but, you know, this is not someone who swooped in from the Hamptons or from Cape Cod. Like, it's been a long time since he's been there. But that was the idea, right? Of here comes the New Englander to the South, and when it doesn't work, it's like, well, of course it didn't work. Or when Brian Harsin doesn't work, you know, the potato man from Idaho, then it's like, well, of course it doesn't work. I think Brian Harsin didn't work. It didn't so much matter what state he was from. It was that guy culturally was just terrible for Auburn. He couldn't recruit. That doesn't mean to me that some other guy from out west or some other guy from the Midwest or the Northeast or whatever couldn't culturally be a slam dunk down there and recruit brilliantly well. All things being equal, having some geographic fit, some vibes fit, does that help? I think it does. But I also don't think that necessarily can be your ultimate guiding light in a search either. It's a little bit of everything, but I do think vibes and that supposed fit, whatever we have in our mind, that probably weighs more at times than maybe it should. And I think for LSU, everybody always does the opposite of what they did last time, right? And so if you're LSU, you went with the outsider hire last time. It means you, for whatever reason, they think they can't do that thing again. And so that's why I think John Summerall particularly becomes attached to a job like that if he's not at Auburn.
No, I mean, the reality is Harsin didn't work because the boosters wanted Kevin Steele when he tried to do the coup.
Mm-hmm.
Then when they couldn't pull that off, at the middle of the night, the AD goes, I'm going to go make my own hire, and he goes and gets Brian Harsin. And so they're already starting off with, this is not who we wanted. And then Brian's problem was, Brian never bought into, like, I need to go and know who the high school coaches are in the South. And, you know, like, it was just a bad marriage from the beginning. But it's not necessarily because, like, he couldn't coach football. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was like, and then by the time I think he had figured it out, it's too late. Everybody's checked out. I don't know. I guess I just always, I'm always very apprehensive about quote unquote fit. Cause it's like, I don't know, man. Like, is he a good coach or not? Like, is Kalen DeBoer really a fit in Tuscaloosa right now?
No. No, and the other thing is, some of these postmortems on Brian Kelly are so far overboard, they're comical. This guy, and this is not really a defense of Brian Kelly. I think by the end, he probably either should have been fired or should have been pretty close to being fired. But when you look at it, the guy went, I believe, 34-14, won 70% of his, doing some quick math in the head, I think that's about 70% of your games there. So it's like, you know, but now you read these postmortems, and it's like, you would think, if you didn't know what he did there, if you didn't know he went 34-14, you would think the guy was an absolute joke, this awkward interloper who just got sucked up by the bayou and we never saw him again. He just disappeared on the bayou because he was so bizarre, so strange. He didn't know his way around, and he made one wrong step, and poof, he was gone. You know, these postmortems are so overblown, and it's like, yeah, should he have been fired? Probably. If not, he probably was pretty close to it. They might have jumped the gun one loss too soon, but he was right in that range. But you know, then you look at it, it's like Brian Kelly got fired because LSU had national championship expectations within four seasons, and he didn't produce a national championship within four seasons. He also didn't produce a playoff team. That was the other thing too. But he went 34-14. I mean, these postmortems are overblown about, oh, he was such a bad fit and that's why he got fired. He got fired because the expectations there were sky high, and he was the same coach that he was the entirety of his career, which was a steady hand who wilted in the big games. It's just that LSU plays more big games than what Notre Dame does, right? And so, you know, it wasn't anything more than that to me. It was Brian Kelly was who he showed us he was throughout 30 years of his career, and LSU hired someone that Brian Kelly was not. And then, you know, as we look back on it, the fit thing takes on a life of its own.
All right, I've got a loser from Tuesday night that I feel like is kind of under the radar. You ready?
Yes.
Vanderbilt.
Yes, I agree. I think that was buried because I think, and what you're saying here is you're saying even if Vanderbilt gets to 10-2,
yep,
you're not sure they're in.
Yes.
And the thing of being in the SEC is supposed to be, and I was going to say the quiet part they don't say out loud, except people in the SEC say it out loud. So this is the part they do say out loud, is that 10-2 is supposed to get you in the playoff. That's what they believe anyway. And I actually think that's the way most of us in this little industry of ours do think, is that 10-2 from the SEC for an SEC team gets you in. But yeah, it's an understatement to say it's not an automatic that Vanderbilt at 10. I don't think it's automatic that they wouldn't get in.
Yeah, no, I agree. The biggest problem for me is they're sitting there at 7-2, and Oklahoma and Texas are at 7-2, but they're behind the ACC conglomerate. And so to me, what that was suggesting is they're not in the same tier. Mm-hmm. And then more importantly, when you look at it, okay, their remaining games are Auburn tomorrow, Kentucky either next week, I don't know if they have another bye, then Kentucky, and then they get at Tennessee. Well, while we know going to Knoxville would be a great win, but like that at that point, that's a non-ranked win. Like, how does that help you? And then on top of that, it's like, how do you get past other people that are in front of you?
The worst thing that happened for Vanderbilt last weekend, the obvious thing to say is they lost to Texas. Okay, yeah,
they didn't recover an onside kick that was like on the ground for 3 seconds.
Yeah, that too. But the very, very, very close second worst thing that happened to Vanderbilt was Tennessee losing to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt needed Tennessee,
yeah,
to beat Oklahoma because they could take care of Tennessee. It was never going to have to be Tennessee or Vanderbilt. That was always going to take care of itself at the end of the season. And what Vanderbilt needed was Tennessee rolling into that game at 9-2 with a pretty good number next to their name. And then Vanderbilt busts out the club in Neyland Stadium, steals the upset, boom. At that point, they're in. But now the Vols are damaged goods at 6-3, might lose. I don't care that Florida loses every close game they ever play. I know the history, as do you, of Tennessee going to the swamp. That is very much in play, the possibility that Tennessee has a fourth loss by the time Vanderbilt gets the chance to play them. So at that point, it's like, oof, you've lost your signature moment. And what is LSU and Missouri going to look like by that point? The unfortunate thing with Missouri is like, well, now they're on to their third string quarterback. But at that point, I mean, Vanderbilt was the one that knocked Bo Prabula out,
yeah,
for the season. And it's like they're going to get less and less and less credit for that win if Missouri gets clubbed by Texas A&M and then loses to Oklahoma, both of which are – I mean, Missouri might finish this thing 7-5, 8-4, somewhere in that neighborhood. So they're not going to get hardly any credit for that win, even though they were the one that knocked Bo Prabula,
yeah,
out. And they didn't look great that day by any means. Vanderbilt didn't.
No.
But they won their clunker, and it's like – well, Texas gets credit for winning their clunkers. Why doesn't Vanderbilt, when they beat a ranked team and they knocked the starting quarterback out of the game? And then LSU, you know, they contributed to the death spiral of LSU. But now that the death spiral is going to continue, Vanderbilt's not going to get as much credit as they probably otherwise should. And the other thing is, come on, the name on the front of the jersey still matters. a heck of a lot. I mean, when you see where Notre Dame is ranked, and then you see where Vanderbilt is ranked, and these guys that go in the committee room and then come out and try to tell us, oh, that type of stuff doesn't matter. Baloney. That is, if they were Pinocchio, I mean, they couldn't walk around because their nose would be so long, they'd be chopping everybody's heads off. So, you know, that is the other thing that affects Vanderbilt, is that name on the front of the jersey says Vanderbilt, and it doesn't say Notre Dame or some other catchy brand like that. So a number of factors at play. I think Tennessee falling apart a little bit here, or at least unraveling some, and what's their record going to be. That's one of the biggest things, but it does matter. That name says Vanderbilt, and there is at least a subconscious bias, if not a conscious bias, against that program.
I mean, to your point, I want to be clear. I'm totally fine with Ohio State being number one. I have zero problem with it. But if you are just saying who's got the better resume right now, I think the answer is Indiana.
Yeah, and who has the best resume is probably Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Unless you're like a margin of victory guy, then okay.
Whatever, it's fine.
In Indiana. But if you're looking at like the fancy analytics, strength of record, strength of schedule, those types of things, there's a pretty good case for A&M too. I don't get – there was a lot of people getting all up in their feels over Ohio State and Indiana. That to me was like the least interesting thing.
They're going to play.
They're going to play.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the least interesting thing. More interesting, and I touched on this in a column right after the rankings, I thought this before the rankings came out. Nobody was talking about the possibility of the Big Ten maybe only getting two teams. And then I see Oregon at number 9.
Yep.
It is I'm not saying it's likely. It is a much higher than non-zero chance that the Big Ten could get stiffed. I don't even know if it would be stiff. That suggests it's unfair. That the Big Ten could wind up with two bids. I think the committee, for as much grief as we often give them, I actually think they got a lot right. And from, well, maybe just a lot that meshed up with my view of the world this week. And one of it was they see the Big Ten for what it is. They have the two best teams in college football, or maybe you can throw A&M with that mix, but I had no problem with Ohio State and Indiana being 1-2. And as we discussed, I really don't care much who's 1 and who's 2 because they're going to play each other. But the committee also correctly saw that behind those two teams, that league's a bunch of the same, right? And it's a bunch of teams that are 18, 19, 20, 21. And are those playoff teams? No, probably not. And a lot of them play each other. Some of them that have two losses, they all play each other. So it's going to be a lot of teams ending up with three losses or more. Maybe Oregon cruises from here. Maybe but they have a tough schedule. They got Iowa this weekend. They're finishing at Washington. They got USC in there. They got 6-3 Minnesota in there. Like if Oregon takes on some water and you got all those two loss Big Ten teams handing each other a third loss, we could be sitting here with the possibility of the Big Ten getting Ohio State and Indiana, and they're both getting byes, and the Big Ten's getting nobody else.
All right, my man, have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
That is Blake Topmeyer, senior national college football columnist of the USA Today Sports Network. Let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk about more from the world of college football. We will do all that next when we get into the list right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Each and every day here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, we do a little thing called The List. Let's fire it up. College football. All right, boys, we've talked about it a little bit, but let's start with tonight. So we have the Tigers hosting Tulane. I'm seeing right now 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
I think earlier in the week, it was up to Tigers by 6. I don't know. This is one of those weird ones where I may be eating my words on Monday, but I did put, before Tiger fans get mad at me, I put my money where my mouth is. I'll lay the number. Okay. I just, am weirdly more worried about them next week than I am this week, simply because of the matchup. Like, Tulane has been bad stopping the run all year, and I think where Memphis is vulnerable defensively is I still do not trust the secondary. But you know who I really don't trust right now? Jake Retzlaff or even Sullivan if he comes in. Like, I don't know if, and it's one of those ones where I do not think Tulane's a bad team by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think all of a sudden, even by adding one linebacker that is clearly a big part of their defense, though, but I don't think that solves all the tackling issues that they've had.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, this is just one of those games where I guess the other aspect of it, though, could be is, what if we get to tonight, and even if we think Brennan's playing, what if he's noticeably
hobbled?
Correct. Because I do think a big part of the rushing success of Memphis is the fact that you have to account for him.
Oh, it's 100%. 100% the case. Yeah, I mean, this is such a tricky game for me, but I'm not as worried.
I don't. Is this why we should be worried?
That I was like,
I don't know. I kind of think they're gonna handle it tonight.
Yeah, and I get the same feeling, and I felt this way since we saw Tulane earlier in the season.
I mean, the game that I still have no explanation. Uh-huh. I've watched it now 3 times.
Which one?
I still have no idea how they beat USF.
Oh.
I mean, I'm glad for you.
Yeah.
That they did, but maybe it's just a credit to it's just like the resolve of the team. And then I guess from like a football perspective, the other kind of at least explanation that somewhat made sense to me is when you run the offense that Golish runs, it makes it very hard to salt the game away. When they were at the point where it's like they just needed to get some first downs and slow it down and bleed the clock.
They don't play like that.
Well, and on top of that, it's like when you slow that offense down, because it's not super complicated in terms of what you're doing.
More of a rhythmic.
Correct. Like when you slow it down, you lose the advantage, and then you start having some three and outs, and you're able to give the ball back. But to me, it's almost like, because I do think ECU can throw it a pretty decently well.
They can.
Like that can, and that's just always a weird trip.
Yep, it's a road game up there.
I do like that they put the game at 3, like, because when I always think about East Carolina disasters in Memphis, I feel like it's always at like 6:30, and the stadium's like 40% full, and there's like that haze hanging over in Greenville, like, and so you can't really see it all that well on your TV. Like, those are the kind of the disasters I think about. But at least at 3, it's like, maybe the sun will be shining, but I don't know. I mean, this is one of those ones where maybe I will look up and realize, like, hey, Tulane had a bad game against UTSA. But it's like, I don't know, man. Those weren't the only games that I saw where they couldn't stop the run.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. Yeah. And when I watched Tulane, like, we talked about it even a few weeks ago. Like, Tulane, to me, is having what I consider a reputation year. Like,
yeah.
They've been really good. Even before, you know, Summerall took over, going back to the Fritz days or whatever. And the thing here is they're just real mad to me. Like, they're surviving and they're winning, but this team is, to me, not on the same level as Memphis if you're just looking at the rosters this season. You know, they haven't been, you know, that great on defense. They haven't been that great on offense. They don't have an area that I'm looking at and saying this is where they could expose Memphis and win this game.
Yeah, I guess the other thing is, like,
I don't see the area. Now coaching, they got a good coaching staff. But
they do. I don't know. I guess the other thing is Retzlaff really that good?
I mean,
at BYU last year, it's like, okay, we're watching literally a kid that is a true freshman that is wearing 47, and I think he showed up in May, who is doing everything that Retzlaff did, if not more. Like, I don't know. The other thing is, like, okay, when you do, like,
Tulane just doesn't impress me.
Like, when I have, like, the matchups.
Yeah.
All right. Offensive success rate.
Yeah.
Memphis is at 50.2%, which is 26th nationally.
Mm-hmm.
Tulane, defensively, allows a 49.6% offensive success rate.
That's
122nd nationally.
Uh-huh.
Memphis on EPA per design runs. So this is not just scrambles. This is, even if it's like, even if Brennan's running, but it's a designed run, it's not a scramble.
Yeah.
Memphis is fourth nationally. Tulane's 113th nationally. Like, the where Tulane has been at its best is defending the pass. But it's like, cool. I would love to see a game where Brennan throws like 17 passes.
Yeah. It's like that's not hurting Memphis as much as
right.
it being a stout run defense that's going to force them to pass the ball 35 times. So this is just, to me, this is a good matchup for Memphis, going to your point, whereas the ECU game, because if you look at that, just, you know, you just think of it like, oh, ECU's a better matchup than Tulane. You're going to have to explain that to people. But when you break it down, yeah, like, this is definitely a game where I'm looking at it on paper and I'm saying there's nothing that Tulane does at an elite or high level that really makes me think they're going to take away a strength from Memphis.
No, I agree. Okay, does anyone else have anything on this before we move to Saturday?
No.
Okay, or does anyone have another Friday night game that they want to discuss? I was really close to firing on Houston because I think UCF sucks, but that line was like dancing.
Uh-huh.
And I started wondering, I was like, maybe is Wegman hurt? I mean, yeah. Wegman was awful last week. I'm not saying that, but it's like, I don't know. That I got spooked off that. All right, so let's go to tomorrow. Are we all in agreement the most interesting game is Texas Tech BYU? And that we don't have to say yes, because, I mean, we might, like, it's entirely possible we get to tomorrow and that line, which is basically the exact same line that Cincinnati and Utah was last week, and we're sitting there in the third quarter asking what else is on.
Yeah. It's not for me. I like the game, though. I think that's a – it's Oregon Iowa's got is the one for me.
Yeah,
I mean it's going to be some nasty football, but I like nasty football. It's fine.
Okay, I'm trying to think of the options. Well, what's now, granted, this isn't a new experience, although there was some life into it a little bit the last couple of years, but it's like Alabama LSU for me is so far down the list.
I can't believe it, but that's where we are.
And I don't know, like, maybe we'll wake up and see, like, hey, interim coach bump and you know.
Yeah.
I think the biggest problem I have with it in the game, though, is it's a matchup thing. I think where Bama is actually vulnerable is teams that can line up and run it.
Why would we
think that LSU in the last week and a half has all of a sudden learned how to run the football?
Did you see, though, there was the and this caught my attention, Blake Baker, the LSU defensive coordinator, basically told Frank Wilson, who's the interim coach, told Frank that we need to do more physical drills
in practice
so my defense can get a better gauge of a physical offensive run game. And they did some 9-on-7 stuff where, you know, they bumped the pads a little bit more. So
basically did everything but corners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe we do get a somewhat, but I, like you said, it's at the end of the day, you might get the little interim bump a little bit, but I'm with you. I honestly think Bama covers. Like,
so far,
10.5. I think
DeBoer is undefeated at home. He's, I believe, overall 7-2 against the spread, and I think in SEC games.
But LSU is unranked now.
That's true.
That's his.
That is something.
Woo, that's the DeBoer special right now.
I wonder if put
two numbers beside LSU and he'll smoke them.
I mean, I guess if you wanted to make the case, a lot of the flaws that LSU has offensively are flaws that South Carolina had.
But South Carolina had a guy who could tuck the ball.
That's the problem.
And LSU has a guy out there running in quicksand.
Correct. And we're not even sure, like, if he's even healthy.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't – I guess he was decent at avoiding sacks in the pocket. Like, but it's not like
he'll
ever
throw it where four guys. He'll throw it over four guys.
Yeah, like I don't know. Okay, so now let's go to Iowa, Oregon, because I think this is the real question.
This is Big Ten football. Oregon hasn't been a Big Ten team for long, but this is some old school Big Ten football right here.
I think the real question for me is Iowa better than we think? Because here would be the case.
Okay.
All right, they did lose at Ames in a game where Iowa State was still fully healthy at that point, and a kid hits a 56-yarder or whatever at the buzzer, and Iowa still had, like, their chances. Okay, and then their other loss is a game in which they took Indiana down to the last possession.
Indy's close to the game.
I think Indiana scored with, what, like a minute and a half left? Mm-hmm. Didn't they broke a run, and then Iowa was unable to answer, and then they took the safety to end the clock.
Ran it all the way back, yep.
But that is, so far, Indiana's only one-score game.
Yep.
And I don't know how y'all felt, but at no point, even as someone who had bet Oregon that game, at no point did I feel like, you know, Oregon's just better than Indiana. I understand it's transitive property and whatnot. I just kind of weirdly think, like, this might be a spot where I've kind of had my doubts about Oregon. Mm. I was not as high on them coming into the year, but then they started the season and they were handling their business, and I was impressed with that. I do think two things have been true.
Uh-huh.
Penn State crumbled, but I was impressed with what Oregon did.
Yeah, you think that was a better version of Penn State?
Correct. They were one of the few teams that was able to sit there and go, strap up, boys. We're going 3,000 miles across the country. Mm-hmm. We are going into the brutal environment, and we're going to match them. And they did.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's been something about Oregon recently that I haven't loved. Like, they filleted Rutgers.
Filleted them. Yeah.
Then they got Wisconsin at home.
They weren't overly impressive against.
And I think Dante got hurt.
Yeah, I think that was probably why they won.
And they were going into a bye week, and that I can also acknowledge this is probably true. I think some Big Ten teams might be like load managing when they play Wisconsin. I think they know, like, you don't have to do anything to beat them. Yeah. And so, like, we actually saw teams kind of do this with Mississippi State last year, and now maybe they're paying the price for it this year because State's been frisky almost every single game. But this is one of those ones where can Oregon avoid the trap that Iowa always sets, which is you're going to go to Iowa and you're going to get into an Iowa football game whether or not you like it.
I think it's going to be an Iowa football game for sure. But Oregon, to Oregon's credit, they've won a couple games this season. I mean, the Penn State game.
Yeah, that was disgusting.
The way that game was played, You change the Penn State jerseys to Iowa's jerseys, and we probably look at it in a similar fashion.
Yeah, so. I think the other aspect of it, though, is everyone's looking at, well, it's going to be 45 and raining.
Uh-huh. So you got some weather conditions you got to factor in. And usually that is advantage Iowa.
Yeah, typically. I guess my argument, maybe 45's a little too cold. I don't know if people are familiar with the climate in Eugene.
Yeah.
55 and raining is not unusual. Now, it's a little cooler.
Mm-hmm. So they're not going to be fazed by it. It's like LSU going to Florida.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I guess the other thing is, I was thinking about this, which is, do we also have to factor in Phil Parker, D.C. for Iowa, made reference this week to well-funded roster. But I've not heard Lanning.
He hasn't really been snappy about that like some other coaches.
The thing about Lanning is, I used to always say Lanning and Dion would tell you. When Dion during the week was making news, bet Colorado.
Yeah.
Because he watched the film and he's like, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to make some noise.
Mm-hmm.
When Lanning would make noise, it was the same thing. It was like, when he would talk in the week, but I've not seen anything.
He didn't say anything because Mike Gundy did the same thing.
Well, remember, he got a little chippy in response, but he clearly made a bigger deal about it. Of course, I don't know. What if the reality was, like, there was just nothing Oregon or Oklahoma State could do about it? Because, like, I mean, we're watching Oklahoma State and Big 12 play. Like, no one can, like, they just can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess this is the other thing. What do we think, what does Oregon do the best? Is it the front on defense?
They're definitely, let's see. I would say the front is really good. I think Dante Moore was solid. You get good quarterback play.
I think he is certainly
he extends plays.
He's one of the three most talented guys.
Yeah, he can extend some plays. He's definitely big arm, like he's a talented guy.
He's a freak.
Yeah.
All right, I'm trying to look. I'm looking through. All right.
Uh-huh.
So Oregon offensively,
because both of these teams defensively get after it like that. So it's,
I guess this is the problem that I have. It's like so much of the Oregon offense is like bubble screens.
But you got athletes. You got five. You got DeCorey
Moore.
Yeah,
but Iowa handles those. Like Iowa's entire defense is they never take their eyes off the quarterback.
Yeah,
and so they're always just keeping it in front, and then they tackle well.
They're gonna have to tackle well because I mean, like Oregon has some good athletes out at receiver who can.
Is this just a game where we're just overthinking this? Why didn't we all just take the under? And we're gonna sit there and look up. And
is
it's
it,
like,
is what is the number? Give me the number right now.
Let's total.
Yeah.
Is it
in the 40s?
I saw 42 this morning. It's 42 right now.
Okay.
So the line is currently Oregon -6.5. The total's 42.
Yeah, I might have to jump on the under there. I was looking for anything over 40 for me to feel.
Because this is where it really starts to get ugly. Iowa passing EPA.
Oh, I bet it's some nasty numbers about to pop up.
-7.46. That is 118th nationally. -0.06 per drop back, meaning they should literally never throw the ball.
Yeah.
They've been decent at running the football. Gronowski's a pretty effective runner if he's not like a great runner, but he's like, he's good at kind of keeping it moving. Like when you need, it's like 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4, and he's got to figure out a way to get a first down. He's pretty good at that. But like most of Oregon's success is kind of chunk throws.
Yeah.
Like, I guess that's the question. Like, maybe we'll see it in the second quarter and we'll realize, like, oh, they can't cover him. And it's entirely possible. But my thing is, if we've seen Indiana look like no one can cover them, I mean, Iowa covered Indiana pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it may not be the most fun watch. But I also think it's interesting because Iowa is still sitting here with only two losses.
Does Iowa get good enough quarterback play? Because it could be a game where we're looking at it's 13-13, late in the fourth quarter. One of these quarterbacks is going to have to make a play, and that's where.
As a connoisseur of Kirk Ferentz football for the last 26 years,
does it
matter? Like, I think it's a serious question. Like,
they're going to just run a punt back for a touchdown or
correct.
Something?
Correct. Like, there's just going to be some, or they block a punt.
Yep.
They're able to.
Something to swing field position.
They punt it down to the two.
Uh-huh.
Oregon can't get it out of their own end zone.
Yeah, and now they're starting on the 45.
There's a face mask on the punt. Then they have, like, there'll be like another running back that makes one guy miss and picks up 11, and then they kick like a 44-yard field goal. Like, is that it? I don't know. I guess that's it. The other thing I'm curious about is A&M has been a little shakier on the road. Mm-hmm. I think we kind of
I'm not playing into it.
Well, I think this is
if Bo was healthy,
so
I'd play ball with you.
I'm also wondering though, is this the? I mean, I ended up mouse trapping myself.
Okay,
everyone's on A&M.
You tend to do that.
So by the way, ask me how it went last week. not good. I did hit Kentucky though.
Oh, that's nice.
I did not think Zellers was that bad, but this is what we've talked about, which was
this defense right here.
Well, the other thing was Zeller's also came in, and he's now had 2 weeks to think about being the starting quarterback.
Yeah.
It's now, maybe the guy's a gamer.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he was, like, I think some services had him as a 5-star. I think he was a consensus high 4. So, like, he is talented. Maybe he is a gamer, but I mean, I think that is really the big question for me is, are we just going to look up in the third quarter and be like, we just need to embrace that A&M's the best team in the league?
I don't want to give them – I mean, they haven't had the toughest SEC slate for me to crown them that, you know?
Okay, so to your point, they have a great win at Notre Dame.
They got a great win at Notre Dame.
Can we also acknowledge, like, I don't – if Buckner just catches the extra point, I'm still not sure that they win.
They call holding.
Yeah, that's true.
But, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, my goodness. But yeah.
The score was the score.
The score was the score. Yep.
A 16-10 win against Auburn, but that was really a 16-3 win.
Yeah. Okay.
I think they're the only team that's covered against Mississippi State this year.
Right? Where was that game?
That was in College Station.
Wow. Voila.
Handled Florida.
Yeah.
Hold on. Auburn has one SEC win.
Uh-huh.
State has one.
Yep.
Is Florida's only SEC win the Texas game? Do they have another? Because they're 3-5, right?
That sounds right.
I don't think they've beat another SEC team.
All right, one. Florida. Arkansas has 0.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
LSU beat Florida. Do they have a second SEC win?
Where are we?
Yeah, they do.
They
beat South Carolina.
Yep.
South Carolina has just the one.
I mean,
but it's a combined 4 SEC wins.
Nothing impresses me. That's like they when you look at the eye test, like they look solid. They look fast. They got some grill.
Very fast.
They got some really good edge rushers over there. You know, we've talked about the quarterback play is up and down, but the highs are the highs. You know, from Marcel. So you got some good wide receiver play. Like they're a solid roster. But I'm not crowning them after this week. Even if this is the LSU game again, where they come out in the second half and look like monsters, like it's you haven't done it against Georgia, you haven't done it against Bama, you haven't even done it against like Tennessee, which is probably a step below. But like it's levels, you know.
They have hammered the bottom card of the SEC.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it's been. So.
All right, let's pick our games of the week. We'll do it next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Boys, since we're up against it with the clock, all right, everybody, you're picking your favorite game of the weekend you can go any sport.
Any sport.
Any sport. George, we start with you, your favorite game this weekend, and you're not allowed to pick the Jets and the Browns. That's the only stipulation.
That's a fair stipulation. Yeah. That was not even on my top five. I have my top five pulled up. But best game of the weekend for me is going to be that BYU at Texas Tech game. Most of my top five here, at least top three, all involve either local interest and or pretty big impact on some long-term playoff races.
Okay.
All right, DeMichael.
Yeah, I like the NFL slate a lot, but college.
God, we have a Germany game. It's the worst.
Yeah,
take it away.
Yeah, I'm not. Can assure you.
Yeah, you're not gonna put that on the list, huh?
And not getting up for that.
I'm going to college basketball.
All right,
which one?
College basketball season is here, man.
Which one? Because I have one on my list in my top five.
Kansas UNC.
Really?
You were going to say St. John's, Alabama?
Yes.
I'm really interested
by that one.
Well, you know, I'm looking at it from the perspective of the combination of the historical prestige. But then, have you seen Darren Peterson? He's that.
He's got it.
He's that. Oh, my. Let me chill because I try not to get too caught in the high school stuff. But that dude, man, he's about it. I've seen some people say, man, he could have walked into the NBA last season and had a decent season. And the side, wait till you see him. But Caleb Wilson for North Carolina too.
Yeah,
6'10", crazy athlete. Like those two guys, we're about to see two top five picks. So you get that part of it, and then you get, you know, Kansas has the returning players. North Carolina has, you know, the Seth Trimble, you know, part of it coming back. That's two really talented teams, but then you get the flair too. Like Darren Peterson is going to be fun to watch all season long, and I think Caleb Wilson is too.
Why did Kansas not get any buzz this year?
It's going to be the Darren Peterson buzz. They're going to get a little bit of buzz, but like Bill Self also has this like holding back freshman kind of a thing on him.
I mean, I will say. Granted, it was one night.
Yeah.
It did feel like the freshman class, they flashed.
Yeah, this
like
this,
the one
this
that's
is a good
it's,
year.
All, it's so ballyhooed that everybody.
Good year to be somewhere in the top eight. You know, it's some dudes out there this year.
Yeah, the Grizzlies might have a couple of them there.
Yeah, possibly.
I can't believe I'm doing this. It's usually early for me to go number one.
Uh-huh.
But I got to stand for something. I got big bro, little bro. Afternoon. Like, I'm going Niners-Rams.
Oh, that's big bro, little bro.
That is big bro,
I still think what Shanny did on Thursday Night Football was truly painting his Mona Lisa. Mm. Like, goes in with half his roster out. I mean,
McVay's going to get that man at some point.
But it's just what? When you watch the little brother, he just keeps swinging and swinging. And like Shanahan even let him win twice last year to just rope me, like, just to let him know who's daddy.
He's going to get him some point, like, really good. Like, but yeah.
I thought about Bucks, Pats, but.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I mean, I'm still not quite ready to say. I'll say this.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in Drake May, but I do not know if I believe in the Patriots this year. And it's not even, I think it's, I don't trust their defense.
I mean, look who they've beaten. This is Texas A&M all over again.
Correct. I mean, they have the win against the Bills on Sunday Night Football.
That's the one win that they.
Correct.
Like, but other than that.
They should have lost last Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Like that one was tough. All right, when we come back, DeMichael has selected our Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. We'll do that next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, boys, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, this is submitted by DeMichael Cole. Let's go to our boy Bradley Beal.
Mm.
When you allow me to be that guy, I'll be that guy. But when you have two coaches that want you to set screens and play in the dunker, you're not Brad Beal. You're somebody else. When's the last time I shot 14 shots for the Suns?
This is when you put your hand on someone's shoulder. You tap him a couple times.
That's enough, buddy.
You're not that guy anymore, man.
Time to go, buddy. time to go. All right, my man. Good luck tonight.
All right, appreciate you.
Of course, follow all of DeMichael's coverage of the Memphis Grizzlies at The Commercial Appeal. You can always follow him on X at DeMichael C. For George, for DeMichael, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.